Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Why are there so many magic rocks in the Book of Mormon? Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry, and with me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. Yesterday, we began looking at an article that is found in the March 2024 edition of the Liahona Magazine. It's titled The Miraculous Translation of the Book of Mormon, and it was written by Garrett Dirkmott, Ph.D. He's an associate professor of church history and doctrine at Brigham Young University, and he also hosts a podcast titled Standard of Truth. As we mentioned yesterday, and quoting Mr. Dirkmott, he says, because the Book of Mormon is so central to believers, it is natural to wonder just how the miracle of its translation took place. And I would tend to agree that probably is something that makes a lot of members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints think about, how did this thing come forth? The question we raised yesterday is, if this is a question that so many members are asking themselves, why is this article published in only the North American and United States section of the Liahona Magazine? In other words, not every member is going to see this article. You have to be a subscriber and live either in the United States or Canada if you're going to be able to read this. If you're a member down in South America, this is not in your copy of the Liahona Magazine. Why not? Why wouldn't you want everybody to know this? That seems to puzzle us here at MRM. But yesterday, we read the paragraph, What Do the Scriptures Say About the Translation? And this is where Mr. Dirkmott talks about the fact that it was Moroni that explained to Joseph Smith that there were two stones deposited with the plates, the gold plates, and the possession and use of these stones were what constituted seers in ancient or former times, and that God had prepared them for the purpose of translating the book. And what we explained yesterday is that these two stones that are mentioned being buried with the gold plates in the stone box were put there purposely after all those years it was supposedly used in the Book of Mormon narrative. Now those same stones are put in with the gold plates where Joseph Smith is going to find them under the direction of the angel Moroni, who we believe buried those plates centuries earlier when he was a human. Now, we could ask, why is a human becoming an angel? Because that's not biblical, and you're absolutely correct. We're just sticking to the story as it's understood by Latter-day Saints. But these two stones that were attached in what's called a silver bow were worn kind of like spectacles, and Joseph Smith was supposed to put them on. They were attached to a breastplate, and he could read the Reformed Egyptian characters on the gold plates into English, which that in itself seems to be quite a feat, a miracle, if you might say. But these were not the only magical stones or rocks that the Book of Mormon talks about. And so we're going to go on in Mr. Dirkmott's article on page U4.
He continues, the use of sacred stones specially prepared by the Lord to be used by seers to translate ancient records is also referenced multiple times by the prophets in the Book of Mormon.
Can I stop you right there, Eric? Because I'm bothered by the way he introduces this paragraph. The use of sacred stones specially prepared by the Lord to be used by seers to translate ancient records is also referenced multiple times by the prophets in the Book of Mormon. I get the impression he's trying to give us this hint, perhaps, that this is something that's common. The only time we really ever read about rocks being used to translate is really in the Book of Mormon. So when he says the use of sacred stones specially prepared by the Lord to be used by seers to translate ancient records, When I read that at first, it's almost like he's given the impression that this happens quite normally. If so, why don't we see this in the Bible? Why don't we see all these translation stones scattered throughout the Bible? Now, we are going to talk about some stones that are mentioned in the Bible, but they were never used for translation of any kind.
The brother of Jared was given two sacred stones by the Lord to seal up with his writings, so they could be used by some future seer to translate his record. The Lord declared, quote, I will cause in my own due time that these stones shall magnify to the eyes of men these things which ye shall write, end quote. And that comes from Ether 3:24. Continues, Mosiah, another seer, also possessed two stones that he used to translate the Jaredite records. Ammon explained that Mosiah had, quote, wherewith that he can look and translate all records that are of ancient date, and it is a gift from God, and the things are called interpreters, end quote. And that's from Mosiah 8:13. Mosiah, quote, translated the records by the means of those two stones which were fastened into the two rims of a bow. Now these things were prepared from the beginning and were handed down from generation to generation for the purpose of interpreting languages. And they have been kept and preserved by the hand of the Lord. And whosoever has these things is called seer. That's an end quote from Mosiah chapter 28, verses 13 through 16. Similar to Joseph Smith, Mosiah, quote, did interpret the engravings by the gift and power of God, end quote. Omni 120.
Now, notice how many times it's mentioned that there are these stones that are used for translation. Now, what we're going to now read as we go on, how Joseph Smith has these stones and he's going to give them a special name, but it's not a name that's found in the Book of Mormon. It's a name that's found in the Bible. So what does he go on to say?
Because these sacred stones were prepared for use by a seer, they are sometimes referred to as seer stones. Though Joseph Smith would initially call the stones found with the plate spectacles, he would eventually use a biblical term for the sacred instruments Urim and Thummim, and it says, see Exodus 28:30 and Leviticus 8:8. He came to use this term to describe other sacred stones as well, not just the ones found with the plates. For instance, even though President Brigham Young taught that Joseph gave the Urim and Thummim stones back with the plates after finishing the Book of Mormon translation, when Joseph showed a seer stone to Elder Woodruff in 1841, he referred to it as a Urim and Thummim.
And of course, that would be Wilford Woodruff that he's mentioning here, who later would become the fourth president of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Notice what Joseph Smith is doing here. He's talking about these spectacles at first that were found with the gold plates and, of course, the means by which he was going to be able to translate the unknown language of Reformed Egyptian. But he gives them the name Urim and Thummim. Now, Urim and Thummim, if you look at Exodus 28:15 in the King James Version, which is, of course, would be the version that Joseph Smith had, it refers to them as being attached to a breastplate of judgment. These stones that were there that represented the 12 tribes of Israel were attached to a breastplate of judgment, not a breastplate of translation. We don't see anywhere in the Old Testament that the Urim and Thummim mentioned in the Old Testament were used for translation purposes. But Smith basically steals the name of those stones. And I have to be quite honest with you, being a 21st century Christian living in the Western world, yeah, these stones are kind of strange. But the Bible does explain that they did give answers to certain questions. There was a reason for them. In fact, I looked up an explanation of what the Urim and Thummim was all about, and I thought, why not go to someone who has a Jewish background that maybe can explain it, since this is part of his heritage? And I found an explanation on Chabad.org, and it's written by a rabbi by the name of Leibel Givisk. It's spelled G-N-I-W-I-S-C-H. Not a very easy name to pronounce if you look at the spelling, but this is what he says about the Urim and Thummim.
In ancient Israel, when a decision of national significance was needed, the high priest was consulted. Within the fold of the high priest's breastplate were the Urim and Thummim. According to most traditions, the Urim and Thummim were a piece of garment with God's four-letter name written on it. Its function was to serve as an oracle, divining whether or not Jewish people should take a certain course of action, and was to be used only by the king, the Jewish high court, or a person needed by the whole community, such as a general. When its services were needed, the Kohen Gadol would stand facing the holy ark with the questioner behind him. The individual desiring an answer would ask a simple yes or no question, such as, "Shall we go to war?" The Kohen Gadol would meditate until he reached divine inspiration. Then, certain letters on the breastplate, upon which the names of the 12 tribes were written, would appear to protrude or light up, producing an answer. The Urim and Thummim were lost after the destruction of the first temple. According to another tradition, it was extant but ceased to work.
So that's one rabbi's opinion on this, and from what I've read of other accounts, it seems to be pretty much basically the same story. They were known to give answers to yes or no questions. We don't see anywhere where this device, the Urim and Thummim, was ever used for translation purposes.
I think we need to also mention, Bill, that yes, this is talked about in the Old Testament, but we don't see any mention whatsoever in the New Testament.
You're absolutely right. We don't see anywhere of anybody in the New Testament even really mentioning the Urim and Thummim, much less using such a device to come up with an answer. So what we have here is Joseph Smith, as I mentioned earlier, kind of cribbing this whole idea and applying it to his story to make it perhaps seem somewhat reasonable in believing that he had something, because he's comparing it to something that's in the Bible. That could be the reason that he's doing it. I can't really say for sure. When it goes on in this paragraph, that says, for instance, even though Brigham Young, 1801 to 77, taught that Joseph gave the Urim and Thummim stones back with the plates after finishing the Book of Mormon translation, when Joseph showed a seer stone to Elder Woodruff in 1841, he referred to it as a Urim and Thummim.
Bill, as an outsider, I get totally confused when I'm trying to understand what a Urim and Thummim is, what the seer stone is that Joseph Smith had in the hat. It just becomes convoluted.
It does, because when you're reading these accounts, you find that they're not always very clear whenever they're giving names to certain things. So if you're not a Latter-day Saint and you're trying to understand this history and you go, man, that makes my head hurt. Well, believe me, folks, it makes our head hurt too. And we read a lot of this. And sometimes there is what appears to be a lot of contradiction, especially when you're starting to throw out names like this. You're going to find when it comes to the translation of the Book of Mormon in particular, it does become a little bit wearisome in trying to keep up with all this. Now, tomorrow, we're going to continue looking at what Dr. Dirkmott has said about the translation process of the Book of Mormon, and he's going to introduce what has come to be known as the seer stone, the rock that Joseph Smith would put into a hat and translate the Book of Mormon by that means.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism.